Welcome to a special episode of the Top Dogs Podcast. Today we have the pleasure of hosting Colin McGuire, the creator of the unique D&D universe Beast World. We'll dive into the Delver's Guide to Beast World, exploring its inspiration, concept, and setting. We'll ask Colin about the influences behind creating a furry-friendly D&D universe, the design of its characters, and the steps taken to build its rich history and societies. We'll also discuss balancing creativity with gameplay logistics, writing adventures, and collaborating with other artists. Join us for an exciting journey into the Beast World. I'm Stream Arcadad.
I'm Whiplash Wolf.
I am Colton.
And I'm Trick the Stick.
And I'm Colin. I'm the aforementioned.
Well, welcome to the show, Colin. So can you introduce yourself to our audience and why you're on the Top Dogs podcast today?
Sure, yeah. So I am running an elaborate scam to get other people to pay for my furry art commissions. And what I do is I take all the furry art and I compile it, and then I put in, you know, a few words. No. Let me start over. So I'm the creator of the Beast World, as you mentioned. We are a tiny, tiny company in Buffalo, New York, who make tabletop games content, specifically for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Our setting is the Beast World, which is kind of a, it wouldn't be wrong to call it a furry take on D&D, but I like to think it's a lot more than that. But that's definitely a good, you know, welcome mat into learning about it, I think.
Can you introduce us and our community to the Delver's Guide to the Beast World? What is the overall inspiration, concept, and setting of this universe?
Sure, yeah. So in the Beast World, so I've given this pitch a whole lot of times, and you know, whenever I talk to someone new, and I sort of try and tackle it from a different angle every time. The Beast World is a, so in the Beast World there are dungeon delvers, and it's kind of a D&D adventurers as a profession, like a blue collar profession. And what they do is they travel around the world in delver wagons, which are kind of vehicles and mobile bases and kind of strongholds on wheels, and they look for entrances to this sort of cosmic force that exists underneath the setting, that causes dungeons to pop up everywhere all around. And these dungeons, they always look different and they're really unpredictable. And for that reason, this sort of the dungeon delver sort of came to be. The main thing about our setting, other than like the facts about it, the vibe of our setting is that everything is new. The dungeon had just appeared 15 years ago. You get a lot of fantasy settings where, you know, everything cool happened 5,000 years ago. Like, everything cool happened, and it's already on, like, a stone tablet, and you're not that person, you're somebody else. What we wanted to do was write a setting where you are the people that will end up on those stone tablets. The Beast World as a universe, like, the entire world of the Beast World is only about 1,300 years old total. And there are species that are old enough that they remember that day when the world was basically created. So that's kind of what we think is fun about the setting, is that, you know, nothing is decided. It's not like when you play in sort of official D&D settings and there's five decades of history and NPCs, and you're probably not going to break into that unless you're Matt Mercer, you know? So yeah, we wanted to create a setting where people could participate and really feel like they had hands on the world. Does that answer your question? I forgot.
I want to input something, because I really think, because I've been watching Delicious in Dungeon, right? So it's a really good anime that's on Netflix. And the fact that you talked about, dungeons, how they're like underlying this cosmic thing and they just pop up into existence, is like, that's like Delicious in Dungeon. Like, I don't know if that's like folklore or anything based in Japan or something, but like, I love that concept of just like dungeons popping up as a result of some cosmic background happening, and it just like pops up, and it's like really good template, and like whoever thought, awesome. I don't know if you thought of that, but like it's a wonderful idea for like ever expanding like your adventures in Beast World. It's like, it's really great. Basically, It's just like a sandbox of like you can just make any dungeon, whatever you want. It's just dungeon based and like anything. It's I'm just really excited to play in this world.
Sorry, I have to restart. Yeah. I will be right back.
No worries.
Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back. What inspired you to create a furry-friendly D&D universe? Were there any specific books, games, or other media that influenced Beast World?
Books, games, and other media. That's kind of like, it's kind of two different questions, because what like a lot of, I think pretty much all D&D settings, it started as a game. It was sort of our D&D game for 2 years, I think, before we, you know, I decided to haul off and write a book. I've wanted to publish a book for a long time. I got this game together with a bunch of furries, and I was sort of passively part of the fandom, but didn't really have a lot of furry friends for that game. We got together and we started playing, and the game was really good, and it kind of grew, and you know, the worlds get bigger and bigger as you run a game. Eventually, I talked with my layout editor, Lexi, and we decided to make a go at it. And the fact that it's a furry setting is really kind of a little bit incidental. It's just sort of, you know, the game we were running at the time had a lot of, you know, furry species in it. And then from there, when we went to go and write a book, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to enter a space that was really, really crowded, you know, because I really wanted to do it right. Like, the reason I didn't publish a book before now was because I promised myself that I wouldn't do it all through my 20s unless I really felt like I had the resources and the killer idea that I thought was going to work. And it turned out that there's not actually a lot of great answers to what if I want to play D&D 5e as a furry character. There's a lot of, you know, kind of animal races in D&D that are kind of sort of furry, but like, I'm sure that all of you guys know, like, you know it when you see it. And anything that isn't 100%, like, if it's not made by furries, you can always tell. You can always tell when it's like, oh, this is an animal that walks, this isn't. We were encouraged by that. So that's kind of how we got into doing it.
Kind of a little bit like the Khajiits in like Oblivion and Skyrim and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, Khajiits are awesome. Like I think they're really cool. And like a lot of the options for like animal people, like Tabaxi is a race and deity. It's like of cat people. And they're really cool. Like they have really good background, but they're not furries. Like you can tell, like there are people who take their Tabaxi characters and then make like furry references out of them, make OCs from them. But in its inception, you can tell that it's not really intended for furries. And that's kind of why we went.
So I'm kind of curious, what consideration did you have in mind when designing furry characters for Beast World? How did these characters differ from traditional D&D races?
So they don't. that was our goal, actually. We wanted the book to feel like more than just a list of things that animals can do grafted onto a D&D character. So one of the things that people notice all the time is that animals can see in the dark better than humans, but not everybody not all the species in the Beast World have dark vision, which is the D&D power to see in the dark. And that's because we didn't want to just list out what's cool about each animal and then that was it. There's definitely some of that inspiration in there. For instance, like our otter has an ability called Noodle Body, where they can fit into any space that's at least the size of their own head. Because, you know, otters are twisty like that. And ferrets are the same way. They actually share a species in the Beast World. And they both have this noodle body ability. It's sort of what ties them together.
But anyway, super cool.
I really appreciate it, yeah. It's actually one of the first species we wrote was the Latine ferrets and the otters. But to answer your question, if you picked up my book and you were familiar with D&D, or if you just looked at the player's handbook, my goal was I wanted them to feel like fully realized species in and of themselves, so that if you were a furry and you had like a non-furry game, wanted to play one of the species, you wouldn't feel awkward or, you know, shy about asking, because they have like a lot more going on than just being animal people.
So you're trying to make the game a little bit more approachable to non-furry players. It doesn't feel as weird or strange to them. You try to tie it into something pretty common, just like you see on there's other games, like I mentioned earlier, the Khajiits, for example. A lot of people, they have a fan base for them, but they're not necessarily furries. So what I'm seeing is that you try to make a game that kind of bridges those two worlds. Kind of that's what you're trying to get, right?
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And I've been really encouraged by doing that, because what I've kind of learned is that a lot of the discourse that you see online about, oh, I had like a really disastrous player, and of course it's a furry, and then like six other people go, oh, furries, that is very contained on the internet. And I had a realization as I read the responses to the book, and like it got stories about people playing it, and that was that people who spend all their time complaining about things on forums or complaining about people on forums, there's a reason they're on forums and not hanging out with people. I have found that 98% of people who have gone to their non-furry games with our book have really gotten a positive response, and that has made me feel better about humanity in general, honestly, because you know, people are awesome about it. Like they've been really cool. But yeah, that was kind of the initial goal, was we wanted a book that was good because it was good, and not just because, oh, it's filling the furry niche and we've never had that before. I wanted people to be surprised by how good the book is.
I will say, when I saw your booth at FWA, when I saw the booth, and I was just like, what is this? It's like, are they just selling like furry like D&D things? Like, I just wanted another dice set. One of my boyfriends, like, hit, and it's like, hey, like, let's look at this. And they're just like, yeah, this is awesome. And then as I was looking at the book, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is like a fully fleshed out universe. Like, this is what I've been trying to come up in my mind when trying to come up with the Top Dogs D&D campaign, because I really want it to be furry friendly, but also approachable by other people who might not be into furries, but just like, you know, anthropomorphic like characteristics and just and that sort of thing. So yeah, when I saw this book and I was perusing through, I was like, I need to buy this. I don't care how much it costs.
I gotta give you credit. Like, I held that book in my hand, and the quality, the print, the images, how it was laid out, it was really impressive. I mean, I hope you're proud. You're proud of your work, because it's absolutely fabulous. Like, it's a beautiful product. It's a beautiful project. A beautiful idea, and I'm sure a lot of people are gonna enjoy it.
The artwork.
Heck, I might even consider start playing. Maybe my first D&D game is gonna be yours.
Alone. The artwork alone.
That would be cool.
The artwork alone. Oh, and I was like, oh my god, there's art here. This is incredible. What? I was like, oh, and like the caravan of wagons in one of those pages. Oh my god, I was like, this is amazing. Look at all these furries here. This is amazing. I'm sorry. This is great. This is everything I ever could have imagined. Like, this is incredible, an incredible set.
I appreciate it. There's a lot of really good art in our work. We work with staff of freelancers. We have a work server, and there's 130 people on our work server, which is like, you know,
that's crazy.
We work with someone at least once, then we have them on our server. So we have our deck of Delvers, which is it's a deck of NPC cards with game stats for all these different characters. We had a different artist for every card in both of those decks, and there are 55 cards in each deck. We work with a lot. I want to collaborate with every single furry on the planet. I hope that my bona fides sort of speak to that, and kind of I really care a lot about this community. I want to give them something that feels real, that feels not corporate, like not owned by a corporation, but that feels up to that level of quality. You know, that it's what y'all deserve. Like, it's what we deserve.
Absolutely.
You made a comment earlier, actually, where you said you weren't really in the furry community. So, like, were you, like, furry adjacent before you, like, published this book and you, like, giving back to the furry community? Like, what is, like, can you, like, elaborate on that? Because I'm actually curious about that. Because I thought you were, like, a longtime furry and you're just, like, bringing your D&D experience into the furry community.
So the thing I always tell people is if I don't call myself a furry, if you asked me, but But if you put me and 9 furries together in a line, I have a line of 10 furries. I've been like consuming furry art and like kind of the content for a lot of years. I probably have a similar trajectory to a lot of furries my age with, you know, getting involved with just sort of seeing stuff on 4chan 1,000 years ago, you know, and kind of sort of passively keeping an eye on things over the years. But I didn't go to a furry convention until we'd already done the Kickstarter for the book. That was our first convention was actually MFF. So we kind of jumped in with both feet. And I have grown my own place in the community since then. And kind of, you know, gotten to know a lot of people, and now all my friends are furries. And, like, it's taken over.
Yes.
My friends that weren't furries.
One of us.
I catch them talking about people, and I'm like, where did you hear that word? How do you know about that artist? And then it turns out that, like, they've been behind my back kind of becoming furries, too. So, yeah. It's my trajectory it was a little strange. Like, I definitely got more into it after I started. I wasn't a stranger to furries before that.
I'm kind of curious, what are unique features or elements that makes Beast World stand out from other D&D universe? Can you walk us through the steps that you took to build Beast World from scratch? Like, how did you get to creating its history, geography, and all these societies?
When we put the book together, one of the important ideas in the book, and sort of my ethos as a writer, is when I'm writing the book, and especially when I'm editing, when I go through and read it again, we read every page, and then if there's not ideas for a game, like if you couldn't spin the ideas on any given page out into a whole game, then it shouldn't be in the book. I try not to waste your time. Like, the book is obscenely long. It is 404 pages, but I wanted to feel like I really had something to say on every page. And to that end, to answer your question, there's kind of like a couple of ways of thinking about it. In terms of the game mechanics, I think what makes it stand out is our wagons are really, really cool. I don't know how to say it more. I like emphatically, like, I'm the writer, and of course I'm going to say that my own book is cool, but like, I think it's a dynamite idea. There's a contradiction in D&D, and everybody who's played it for long enough feels it, which is everybody in D&D wants to have like a stronghold. They want to have like a town that's their pet. You know, they want to get to know people in a single space, and they want to become locals somewhere. Like, that's a really cool part of the adventure, is like getting to know NPCs and having like a home base, right? This is a big thing in D&D. It has been since the beginning. Like, the very early D&D books were all about like getting enough money to buy a stronghold, to buy your castle. But the contradiction with that is the other thing that D&D characters and parties and players want to do is they want to travel the entire world. Like, that's the whole thing. It's about traveling these weird worlds, and, you know, you go into a swamp where there's tentacles coming out, and then you go to like a desert where everybody's starving to death. There's like all these weird places to see and all these experiences to have out in this fantasy world, but you can't do both. You can't really do both. You can get around it with teleport and time skips and stuff, but like, we wanted to create a setting where doing the road trip game and having a hometown were not mutually exclusive. That's what sets our setting apart, sort of in terms of mechanics, is you can do that, and there's rules to help you do that, and it feels good to use those rules. It feels like you're really doing something intentional, and you're not just sort of, you know, filling out a form, and then I don't really do any work, but you just play pretend. You know, you pretend that there's this stronghold or whatever. I think we really did the work to make it feel like a real part of the game that matters to how you play.
God, I'm gonna explode. I would have, like, talked to you for hours. God, you're incredible. Your mind is amazing, I will say. Yeah, because I didn't know about this wagon system until Kofi, actually. When I went up to the room and we talked about what we did in the dealer's den, and Kofi bought the book, too. And it was just like, he talked about this wagon system. Like, what wagon system? What are you talking about? And And then I saw it, I was like, this is incredible. Like, this is amazing. This solves a lot of things that I've been looking for in my own D&D campaign. Now I'm a player, but how our DM solved it is that we're just stuck on one island and we can't leave. So we like form a little community and like camping and everything and NPCs come. And it's actually really reminiscent of like a really childhood game of mine called Suikoden or Suikoden or whatever. Whatever you want to call it. Sweet. I don't know how to say it correctly.
Yes. Oh, yes. My God.
Yes, that's why you're amazing. You're amazing that you know what that is. You are amazing. You're amazing. I tell you right now, you're amazing that you know what that is. Yes. But yes, I saw the wagon system. Yes, I know. But the wagon system reminds me of base building. And it's just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Anyways, go ahead.
So there is a mini game. We actually sell the mini game. The mini game that has the three really heavy metal dice. It's called Verasta's Knucklebones. And Verasta, if you read the rules for Verasta's Knucklebones, it's based on a game that is all over the place. And like it's played in like urban centers in America. And this game is like hundreds of years old. But I heard about this game for the first time in Suikoden 4, because yes, we play a version of it in Suikoden 4.
Yes, you do.
So you probably recognize it. You recognize
yes,
the game.
Yes, I do. It's like, there's no way. Like, that's why I was like, this has to be based on Suikoden. Like, it has to be.
All right, so, you know, there's a lot of elements you have to think about when you're creating, you know, a book like this. How do you balance the creative aspects of world building with the logistical details needed for gameplay, such as rules and mechanics? How do you come up with all that stuff?
Like I mentioned a little bit ago, we try not to waste your time, and we do want to offer like a wealth of options, and we want like because that's what's best about D&D, and it's what in my opinion, no other game does better, and nobody really talks about it enough. Is that D&D has a lot of options. It's not too complicated, but there's just a lot of stuff to pick from. There's a lot of ways to realize your own character. And I wanted my book to have that stuff, but we also don't want to waste your time. We don't want to put anything in there that's kind of filler, you know? So we try and tie the mechanics. This is something that we actually do a little differently than vanilla D&D. We tie the mechanics more into the other aspects of the game that aren't as well loved in vanilla D&D. There's like 1,000 spells in D&D that you cast during combat. D&D is a game written about high fantasy combat. Don't let anyone tell you differently. Like, most of the rules are about how to win a fight. And there's like 3 rules about how to hold a conversation. So we wrote a bunch of spells, especially our spells, but we wrote spells and some of our prestige classes, which are kind of like, it's like a, what flavor of your specific character class are you? What kind of fighter are you? What kind of wizard? We wrote those more from a non-combat perspective because it's the way that we play the game. And it's also where I saw the most room for the game to grow. D&D 5th edition has been out for, oh my gosh, it came out in 2014, so we're coming up on 10 years now. There's a lot of content. Like, there's a lot of first-party books, let alone, like, all of the really cool third-party books. So you really have to find a niche and try and make someone's game better for having the book. And that's kind of what the approach we took was, what are we going to put in that we haven't seen a dozen times before, you know? And sort of the non-combat approach is what we took.
Because you kind of want to make yourself unique and different from other people out there. This is what is going to draw a lot of, you know, attention, and people are more likely to play your game. You have to make something a little bit different. So that it's cool that you're taking that into consideration. The wagon system looked really interesting when I looked at it, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We worked really hard on it. We actually for the wagon the mobile encounter system, we call it. It's kind of the optional rules for D&D combat that's always moving. Because the thing about D&D combat, and you'll learn this when you play, because you're going to play.
Stream.
Well, I have to sit down at some point, spend some time for it.
Yeah. The thing you learn about D&D is that D&D combat is about people walking up to each other and then standing still while they do their thing. There's a little bit of abstraction. You could do a little bit with, like, move and then attack, then move. but it's all in your imagination. There's no mechanics for like hitting some. There's not even like a charge attack that's vanilla in D&D. It's specific to a class. We wrote the mobile encounter rules. We wrote them for D&D combat on the run. And we did 3 weeks of full-time work on this. It was the only thing that we did in the office was coming up with these rules. We threw out two almost complete systems because they couldn't pass the sort of final test, which is we come up with all the rules and then we ask a bunch of questions about like, well, can you do this? Can you do this? Can you jump from the roof of one wagon onto another? Can you do last minute repairs in the undercarriage as it's kind of falling apart? And like, we had this list of experiences that we knew people who like D&D were going to want to have. Like you want, and we wanted the mechanics to allow those things in a really awesome way where like, it feels like the system was made for me to do this really awesome thing. And if the system couldn't facilitate those things, we threw it out. Like we threw out two whole systems before we came to the one.
I'm sorry for dominating the conversation because I'm loving this, like what you have created, because a lot of things. So I've only been playing D&D for like maybe 6 or 7 years now. That's something I really noticed as well. And I never took note. I wasn't cognizant until you actually said it right there about having the classes be so combat focused. And then when you interact with NPCs, just like, I guess I can mesmerize them with an illusion spell or something, or be like, use my invisible mage hand to like poke them over here and distract them or something. But like having a lot of like your prestige class, what you called it, or like the specialization of classes to be like non-combat related, but in order to enhance like your interaction with the universe is incredible. And I have not read any of the classes because I've been very busy, but I want to see what you all create. I'm very excited. Like, especially since it's not combat related. It's like, that's amazing. I love that. I really love that idea. Like I didn't know how great this book was when I bought it, but I'm so glad I bought it. Like, I was already sold on it just by like the artwork and just like the how fleshed out it was. But like, it's even more fleshed out than I thought it was. It's incredible. That's amazing. I'm so excited.
It's one of my favorite things about not being famous is I want to be well known because like I want everybody who'd be interested in the book to have it. But and obviously like, you know, I would like to retire someday, whatever. But the thing that I like about not being super popular and well known is, I think our work is good, and because our work is good, nobody's ever heard of us. So we get a lot of like surprise, like, oh my God, why haven't I heard of this? This is like a secret that I'm discovering. I love that. Like, that's my favorite kind of feedback. That means a lot to me. You know, you've played before, so that makes sense. Like, by all means, dominate the conversation.
Yeah, I just love D&D a lot. Like I play weekly, and I'm just like, it's incredible. Yeah, thank you.
Okie dokie. Stay updated with our Top Dogs podcast by subscribing to our YouTube channel, ringing that notification bell, and following us on your favorite podcast platforms. Hit that follow button to be notified for every new episode. Share the love by leaving us a quick rating as well. Connect with our community by joining our Discord server and Telegram chat community. And you'll find all the necessary links in our link tree down below. We appreciate your support.
Hey, Top Dogs fan. If you're looking to snag awesome perks while supporting us, explore our server subscription on Discord or Patreon. By becoming a podcast supporter, you'll access exclusive behind-the-scenes footage, join supporter meetups, express yourself with a custom hand-drawn emoji featuring the Top Dogs team, and chat with the podcast team and fellow fans. Plus, we've got the brand new After Dog show for mature audiences only at $2.99 a month. Craving more? Upgrade to the Podcast Supporter Plus for $5.99 a month and enjoy episode voting, suggest podcast episode, and become part of our live audience. Plus, unlock exclusive sneak peeks of upcoming ideas, merch drops, and much more in the future. We also have a brand new feature where if you don't have a VR headset or a powerful computer to run on desktop, we also offer streaming of the episode directly on our Discord server. There is no obligation to join these subscriptions, but your support genuinely makes a huge difference for our team. And to those who've already subscribed, a heartfelt thank you sincerely from the bottom of our hearts. And if you don't follow our socials, I think Whiplash has something to tell you guys.
What is it, Whippy?
Nah. It may be this. Whippy.
We're gonna force you to play.
I think he's just
D&D.
Gonna come. No, he's gonna come and steal your D&D books.
Not the D&D book. I need it.
No. Mix the dice up. He's gonna come and mix all your dices up.
No, I'm gonna come back to my D20 and steal my shirt back that he took.
Yeah, that's right.
For the question of the week, what D&D class would your persona be? Kofi Cola says, like 90% of all my D&D characters, a bard. Tesla of Waffle says, this is probably one of my favorite questions because that is what I heavily implemented on with my character. I really love the idea of bringing my persona into a world I can play and mingle with. So, though my boy turned into a dragonborn wizard. Bodhi, my persona is a wolf, so maybe a rogue with a stealth class. Like Eos says, probably a rogue assassin with a hunter subclass. Sakura says, I've never used my persona in a D&D campaign, but the two main classes I use are ranger and eldritch knight. Being able to combo both magic and physical attack is really unique for me. If Sakura were to ever be in D&D, I would probably have her as an Eldritch Knight. I don't know what that is. So thank you so much, you guys, for your answers. This is just a few of between the many that we got. So don't hesitate next week. Maybe your answer will be featured. For the next part, I'm curious, how do you approach writing adventures and storyline within Beast World? Do you have any favorite story arcs or quests that you wrote?
So that's a good question. The first book and sort of what's available right now is the setting book. So there's no specific story in it. There's a lot of characters in it, but it's more of a toolbox for players and games to kind of, you know, jump into the setting. Right now, I'm working on a full book called A Summer in Dungeon Town, which takes place over 3 months in this town called Dungeon Town. That has a whole lot of plot details that I'm not allowed to share, but
for obvious reasons.
But the other thing that's actually... The other thing that's actually out right now is the Pathpost Dungeon Scout Kit, which is it's a book of 6 smaller adventures. They're kind of 1 or 2 shot adventures, and I actually wrote a couple of those. And my favorite one is probably Fiametta's Dungeon Grand Prix. It's about this mechanic who wants to get into the world of events promotion. So she contacts the crew because she wants to do a pilot race for a bunch of investors to show off how cool it would be if there was like a Dungeon Grand Prix that goes over like, you know, the Beast World with Delvers in their wagon. And then some stuff happens in it that, you know, I'm not going to spoil it, but things go a little bit off when you actually agree to do the race. I think that's a good one. It's got some cool character stuff in it. I really like telling stories that let the players make friends with someone and put... I like to introduce an NPC that people will like and then put them in a vulnerable place so that the party can kind of connect with them. I think that's one of the things that D&D does better than video games is you can interact with someone and like... give them emotional support in a way that isn't just like picking the response you want to do off a list, but like you can really think of what to say and make someone feel better about their position in life and like make it real for everyone at the table and get that gratification out of it. And everybody leaves the table feeling good about themselves. Like you have the power to do that. I think it's really cool. So I like to put that in my stories whenever I am.
So obviously you mentioned earlier you were kind of a big team. You said you were like 150 artists and writers as well?
We have a bunch of things in the works right now. We have about 9 projects that are at various stages of development. The most immediate one is A Summer in Dungeon Town. That's the one that's kind of taking up all my time right now. But we have a lot of different stuff going on. One of the things that we have going on is we're writing larger adventures, kind of short, still shorter than the Dungeon Town book, which is going to be about 200 pages or so. But we're doing shorter, they're called adventure modules for people. And they're kind of paperback stories within the setting. And I have several different writers, and shout out to Kit, who are working on that. I have some people from my Discord server who, like, after the book came out, they were really interested, and they gave me treatments, and I brought them on as writers, so.
And how did their contribution shape your final product?
That's a cool question. I want to talk about Hindru for a sec. My buddy Hindru Denver is the person who drew my map. The interplay, he's working on Dungeon Town too, and he's indispensable to me. Hindru helped me design the geography of the Beast World, and he did the art of our map. Our map is gorgeous. It's unbelievable how good it is. And I did a bunch of homework about geology and like how roads form and like road networks and stuff, and just sort of talked with him about my priorities. And then he would show me drafts, and then I would write. There are locations in the book that wouldn't exist if I hadn't seen them in map drafts. And I was like, oh, I know exactly what I would put there. And then I'm the author, so I put a little white dot there, and then it exists. Like, that's kind of the cool thing. Like, but that's kind of that is it in a nutshell. Like, with a lot of the visual design stuff in particular, I would get art back, and then my stories would change based on the demeanor and like kind of the vibe of the art that I get back. So I like to think that it's a really collaborative work. And I'm the creator, but I'm really more of the steward. Like, you know, I kind of steer the ship, but I'm far from the voice that's in the book.
You steer the ship, but you steer the ship. What? Wow, you steer the ship, but you ride along the waves as they come. You know, it's really cool because you know, having artists, they allow you to give visual to the story that you're trying to come up with, and also the interpretation of what they'll do. Like you mentioned earlier, I think it's really cool because it sparked new ideas and new things you could add, or maybe you didn't want to go a certain direction and you're redirecting. I think that's really cool. It helps develop a product that is even better made and gets even better over time. So I think it's a really cool thing. I'm pretty sure having a team really helps here because it's cool to I'm trying to structure my phrase right now. It's cool that
you sold a map.
You kept an open mind.
In a large format.
Yeah.
I want it.
A large format, yeah.
I want the map in a large format.
You do?
Awesome, man.
I would love a cloth map of that. Like, just have it in my space, because I love that map. It is incredibly gorgeous. Like, the how it's structured and everything. Like, I can look at that for hours.
Send me a
DM. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I will.
Go on Vistaprint and get it printed on a big canvas.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. It's so much gorgeousness in this book. I'm just like, go. I'm sorry. I'm just fanboying at this point.
So as you were working with your colleagues, I'm kind of curious, can you share any memorable moments or stories from developing or playing Beast World?
So, oh man, the writing process, when we were actually working on the book in earnest, we did our Kickstarter in September, well, technically August 31st, but September of 2021. And then in the immediate months after that, we were kind of getting everything set up. We were deciding how this was going to look and like inventing our own jobs, kind of, because, you know, there was nobody to tell us what to do. We had $450,000 and a D&D book to create and no direction on how to do it. Our office is, as of right now, there are 5 people in our office. But at the time, there were 3 people. It was myself and
Lexi Fox and my buddy Celius, who's our kind of managing producer. And that January, we got started. And we went deep into the fire. if I can share like a vulnerable, I struggle with attention deficit disorder pretty bad. And it's tough for me to have any kind of assignment that doesn't have a deadline. And there wasn't a strict deadline for our book. There was an estimated delivery date of book. But beyond that, it was just sort of like, keep us updated and whatever. Like, that's how Kickstarter works. And that is, I mean, that's really liberating on one hand. But on the other hand, it's like a death sentence for productivity for people with ADHD in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And that March, we were a few months into it. That March, we were having problems. Like, I was having a lot of, like, motivation issues and, like, you know, just feeling... I don't know, like feeling like an imposter, like kind of like, can I actually do this? Can we actually get a book out? You know, it just felt so daunting at the time to have promised a 400-page tome that I had finished, you know, 30 pages of at the time or whatever. But you know, we got through it, and it was only with the others, it was only with Lexi and Celius' help that I was able to get through it. And that's kind of that's the mission statement of our whole deal. It's through working with other people, and like, you know, we do our best work when we have someone else to kind of hang on to as we learn to do it. And we try and stay curious and, you know, catch each other when we make mistakes as we learn new stuff. So, yeah, that's a story.
I'm kind of curious.
Thanks for sharing that, actually. Oh, yeah, got you.
So, Colton, I'm going to ask a question for everybody, because I realize, like, I don't know much about you or Whiplash, but, like, Colton, you did mention that you have experience playing D&D. You've been a DM as well at Dungeon Master, if for people that don't know. Trick, what's your experience with D&D?
I played D&D for a lot of high school. That was one of our things that we did for fun, was play Dungeons and Dragons. I got killed a lot by the DM originally. My first DM did not like me. He hated me and loved to kill me off.
That's not fair. Oh my god.
Oh man.
What about you, Whiplash? Any experience?
I mean, I have very, very liminal experience. When I first became like friends with the people I am with now, we did a few sessions, and honestly, we didn't finish like the actual journey itself. So it's been like 8 years too, so I mean, I can't really remember the entire thing. But I would like to get back into it, honestly, and listening to this tonight, I actually would love to try, especially with this one over here.
What, me? I will show you a bad time.
So, Colton, do you think you're going to be the DM, or is it... Are you going to be the DM, or is it going to be Kofi?
So, as a little bit of a preview for the Top Dogs community who's listening up to this point, Top Dogs is actually doing a D&D group, which will be streaming on Twitch soon, TM. And I, Colton, the illustrious person of Top Dogs, will be your DM. And Phoenix, who's behind the camera, actually might be a DM as well, given our conversation that we might have. So basically, we're going to have several groups running based on everyone's experience. The more experience of the Top Dog staff will have me as the DM, and I'll be chaotically evil, just so you all know. It's going to be a good time.
Let me join.
As evil as otters can be.
You're welcome.
So what is you guys experience playing D&D? Like, how long you've been playing it? How many total hours approximately have you played? I'll start with you, Trick.
I have no idea. I'll be honest, like 100 hours max.
What about you, Colton?
7 years worth, and we play weekly for like 4 hours. I don't know what the math is.
Dang.
It's a lot. it's a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, you got it? All right, thank you. So it's 4 times 52 times 7.
1,400 hours.
1,400 hours. That's more That's more hours than I have in VR chat in total. I'm 1,330.
There you go. Wow.
In VR chat. I've never played D&D before. I know my husband started playing D&D with some friends. And it's more like in a futuristic type of environment. So that definitely speaks to me. Me personally, I'm not a big fan of like old medieval style, you know, capes and like dragons and swords. And I prefer more the modern style stuff, like cyberpunk or like futuristic, like Mass Effect. That would probably be my style. Though yours looks really interesting. It has a little something in between that feel could really catch on my attention. So I'm definitely going to look into that. Honestly, I would love to be able to have like my arm turn into like different type of weapon, and I could like defend myself. That would be kind of cool.
Wow. Yeah. I'll give you metallic dragons.
I mean, rocket launchers are always fun too to have in games, I think, but oh well, it's not for everybody.
You're gonna hate me.
What about you, Whiplash? How many hours do you think you have playing D&D?
See, probably like 50, 60 hours. Because the first time I actually played it, we kind of like went deep into it, and then just stuff happened and we just stopped playing. That was about it. It's been a while.
What about you, Colin? How many hours have you played?
I have played D&D for over 2 hours.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of
hours.
Let's go.
Woo! No.
Let's go.
I have a lot of experience with this. I've done a lot more DMing than I have play. If anybody wants to run a long term, that would be awesome, because I've run two different games from level 1 to level 20, 2 year campaigns, and then I've done two other campaigns that were kind of jumped around a little. Those were multiple years long too. And then the Beast World game, obviously, it's going on 4 years now.
Now we have time for one more question. So, Cole, I'm really interested in this one. I'm really curious to hear what you're going to say. What advice would you give to someone looking to create their own unique and furry-friendly D&D universe?
I would advise those people to stay out of my turf.
This is my niche.
That's my ground, boy.
No. you please just edit the rest of my answer out and just cut it off there. No.
Oh no, yeah. That's staying in. People will tell it's a joke.
There's no, find something funny about it.
My advice would be to figure out what you like, and really make a list of stuff that you like. Literally, like, specific stuff I like when this happens in D&D, like as specific as you want, and then kind of think about those things and how can you write a game or a setting, or even if you're just writing like a homebrew race, how can I write a thing that will let that happen more easily and let it happen as often as I want it to happen? That's what we did with the Delver's Guide. That's what I think. That's a sign of good work. Excited about the stuff that it creates.
That's really cool. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. So, Colin, thanks again for coming up to our show today and talking more about your game, you know, Beast World.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm looking forward to see like what people think about it. Maybe we'll get some comments in the comments. In the comments below.
Good?
I can brain
you
for good? A second.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
I'm really
probably
excited to play aneurysm. This game. I want to look in. Will we have a link that people can find you through?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Some of our distribution is done through Fenris Publishing. So if you go to the Fenris Publishing website, all of our stuff is available there. And we're on itch.io and I'll give you guys some links, but yeah, please check it out. And if you can't afford the PDF of the book and you want to read it, just send me an email. My email is colin@heartleafgames.com. We give the PDF away to anyone who's willing to say something nice to us. So like we like your money, like, you know, it helps us pay our rent. But if you're hard up for cash, like, we want as many people to read this as want to. So yeah, we'll find a way to make it happen. So get on our Discord, send us an email, like that.
We will have the links down below in the YouTube video if you guys are curious. Make sure you go check out our YouTube channel and subscribe there. We're going to have a little comment section in the description where you can see all those links. So, yeah, well, did you guys want to add anything to this episode?
You're awesome. Thanks for coming. I appreciate you. You're amazing.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. You guys are great. This was awesome. Thank you so much.
I'd
love for you to cameo on one of the campaigns. Like, I would love for you to be on there, like for like an episode or something. That would be so amazing. I'm gonna poke you a lot. Just tell me when to stop.
Gosh, buy me dinner first.
Right? No worries. I'll buy you a steak dinner. Whatever you want.
And I hope you guys have a fantastic morning, fantastic day, fantastic evening, fantastic night. You guys take care, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Top Dogs Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.